it is Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
And welcome in to the Wednesday edition of Robbie and Rexrode. I'm Joe Rexrode. Robbie Stanley has taken ill, unfortunately. Apparently that happened last night at the Nashville Predators' rousing comeback. The Predators were making an incredible comeback, and Robbie was doing the opposite of making a comeback at Bridgestone Arena. So Robbie's out today. I thought Paul Kuharsky might be coming in. Not sure. We'll see.
I guess we'll see, Joe.
We'll see. But it's me, Joe Rexrode, here with you, and of course producer Nick Keyser here. Nick, how you doing today?
It was howdy. Hey.
4 degrees when I came in. How about you?
No, it was cold last night leaving Bridgestone Arena. It was cold this morning. A little bit warmer actually this morning than it was last night, honestly. So I'll take it. But hey, it might get back up to freezing today.
It was 4 degrees. What do you mean? I don't think it was warmer today.
I think it was warmer. It felt warmer to me. Maybe it was the wind. I don't know.
Okay. Yeah, I guess that does matter. Robbie and Rexrode, sponsored by First Horizon. Big bank muscle, small bank hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. And, of course, we're broadcasting from the Bisbee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. So we're sort of playing it by ear here in the first hour. Again, I'm texting Kuharsky. I don't know. I mean, I know he needs his beauty sleep. He will be in. This is his day to come in on a normal day, at least for, you know, the 8 o'clock hour.
He's getting all his Brinker questions ready.
That's right. Yes. Yeah, and we will get into that later for sure. We got the Titans with, you know, different sorts of press conferences today, introducing the new GM, but then also Chad Brinker in a non-audio video presser, and just really interesting and some might say weird stuff there with the Titans. But let's start with those Preds, Nick, because they did make history last night. You're talking about the first 4-goal comeback in franchise history in a game that, and you were there, a game that would have been, you know, a pretty significant embarrassment had it kept going the way it was going. UC Saros pulled after one period, just completely getting outplayed. You know, the same day we're sitting there talking about what if they do make a run, what if they're building on this. What if, you know, they can actually get themselves a little bit into, you know, back in the land of the living before the Four Nations break here, and they're just getting absolutely pummeled by the Sharks, and then they come back and they win 7-5. So, you know, ultimately, it's a pretty big win. I mean, I could see this win being one of those moments for a team that you know, is trying to get on a roll. But also, I wonder about how it ever got to the point where you have to come back like that against the San Jose Sharks.
I mean, last night I was sitting there and I honestly thought the game was over in the first period. I mean, UC Saros allowed the first shot to go in, and it was Macklin Celebrini, the huge name as a rookie.
Yep.
And I mean, after that, I honestly thought that the defensive performance was the worst I've seen it all season. I mean, Justin Barron caught deep in the offensive zone, and then it happened once again later on. I believe it was the third or fourth goal that he was caught lacking once again. But last night was just the microcosm of the entire season. You know, Andrew Burnett kind of said it best afterwards, but it truly was a great example of what this season has been to its fullest extent so far. And look, Justus Ahonen came in, and honestly, he's come in cold a couple of times since he was traded for, and he's looked really good. And that was something that I asked Andrew Burnett about last night, was him just coming in and what that does for his team. And, you know, he's done a pretty good job. So with the Preds last night, Joe, they joined the Colorado Avalanche. By the way, I know that you're is it your aunt that likes them? Is that who it is? Or your cousin that turned from the Red Wings to the Avalanche, right?
Yeah, Aunt Mary.
Aunt Mary,
Aunt
that's
Mary
right.
was a day one season ticket holder in Denver for the Avs.
Right.
Remains a rabid
yep.
Avs fan after growing up a Red Wings fan.
Yeah, so they joined the Avs this year as the only two teams to make a four-goal comeback and win, by the way. So that was interesting to see last night. You know, hey, Philip Forsberg scored late to put the dagger in the big wound on the Sharks. You know, I honestly thought that what was more impressive to me was that the Preds were able to rally. You know, I mean, that's not something that we were used to seeing early on this season. And, you know, they're really hoping that this win is sort of a statement for them. And funny enough, they play the Sharks again on Thursday evening, Joe. So, but it's in San Jose this time. So we'll see how they react to this one, and they cannot get off to the same start on Thursday.
Yeah, you know, last night, of course, also could have been, you know, it could have been, well, especially with Saros playing the way he was. You know, a very interesting night with Yaroslav Askarov in net. Unfortunately, you know, they played him the night before, so he did not play last night. But boy, would that have been interesting. You know, look, I will ask this also, and look, I mean, a bad game is a bad game. Like you said, there was some terrible defense in there that, you know, had a lot to do with the issues. But, you know, Saros, I mean, if they're gonna really make this run, I mean, Saros has got to, he's going to have to be at his absolute best. He's going to have to be great. And I'd say a couple of those last night, man, you got to stop those pucks. Again, I know it's one night, but where do you think he is right now?
I mean, that's tough. I think he's still the same goalie that we're used to, but I don't think he got too much help last night, albeit I think you're exactly right. This is not the same version of him that we're used to. I don't know. I think a lot of last night came down to the positioning that I felt like that the Sharks were, you know, having over the Preds. And, you know, I thought that maybe in the first period, Saros just was kind of, you know, hey, I'm kind of getting used to this again after allowing that first ugly goal, honestly, because, you know, Justin Barron, like I said earlier, just was caught deep. And then it was an odd man rush, deep pass from Cody Ceci. So, look, I think what the Preds lacked last night was protection, plain and simple. And when you don't do that, you're going to leave your goalie hanging out to dry. I mean, look, Mikael Granlund scored last night on a one-timer. I mean, it was just a great, great shot by him. But I think for UC Saros, that might be one that he wants back. That's a guy that he can read. That's a guy he's probably used to. But, you know, on the power play last night, you know, the Sharks looked pretty good. I mean, and then Nashville had a couple of their chances as well. But I think for Saros' sake, Joe, he has to find his form. He has to find his confidence. And I don't think he's exuding that very well right now. And I think Justus Onanen has really seized the moment of opportunity for him to come in and play. And so, good for him. But your main question is, you just signed your goaltender to a long extension over the summer, and it's not looking too pretty currently.
Yeah, I mean, he has to live up to it over a long period of time. But you know, again, if they're gonna actually do something here, great comeback last night, historic comeback last night. He's gonna have to be great. Big Justice looked great. A texter on the text line says, by the way, you can hit us up on the phone and text line, driven by WilsonCountyHoney.com, 615-737-1025. Big Justice, what do they call him?
Calling him Big Juice.
And he's the other juice, too.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, I mean, 15 saves in relief, big time. Again, I mean, you got Novak gets a goal there. Sveshkov gets you a goal.
I really thought that line was one of the Preds' best last night, honestly.
Which is a welcome development. You know, Marchessault, of course, the Yossi play with O'Reilly was fantastic, and Yossi gets the one-timer to go. Barron, like you said, I mean, there's You know, there's some.
He scored, but
he scored.
You know, it was very questionable.
It's looking a little rough on the Barron front as well for the Preds. But you know, again, like that's a. I mean, I'm getting texts from friends that are just disgusted last night who were at the at the game, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, this is incredible. You know, I mean, it's a night like that. You never know. You know, a night like that could be something. But you know, this is where. You know what you do from here is you go out and you beat that team soundly, right? Like that's what you should do. And this schedule, as we detailed yesterday, ahead for the Preds, ton of opportunity. I mean, a ton of opportunity coming up to really try to build some momentum and really get going here for a team that now has won four straight games. Four straight games. There's a shootout win in there. There's biggest comeback in franchise history in there. So it's getting a little bit interesting. And I understand for people who have kind of resigned themselves to please lose, let's get a great pick. You know, these guys are not on board with that, which should be no surprise. And yeah, look, they're still too talented to me to. Just continue to stay where they were. I also have my doubts that they can actually get into the playoff field. We have a caller on the phone line driven by WilsonCountyHoney.com, Bob in Antioch. Bob, how's it going?
It's going great. Always going great in Antioch. I was looking at their schedule. I think they've got 36 games left to get even 99 points, which is what they had last year. They've got to go 29-7.
Is that all?
I don't think that they're going to make the playoffs. So, being realistic, what do you guys think Barry Trotz should do? Because I'm sure that he realizes that the odds are very much against him. What do you think that he should do the rest of the year in terms of moves he should make or shouldn't make?
It's a great question. Thanks for the call, Bob. And you know, let's get to that. It's a really good question. I have some thoughts on that. We'll get to that in a moment here on Robbie and Rex Show, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
When you're down 5-1, I know you got too quick in the second right there, but where does that belief come from that, hey, we're not out of it even though we're down that
far? It comes from our group. You know, it's you're proud of them. You know they haven't given up all year, and they haven't given up in that game. And they kept pushing for this. Nothing I did, they did it all. And they wanted it, and they went and got it.
That was Andrew Brunette last night at Bridgestone Arena after the Preds completed the biggest comeback in franchise history. As Johnny on Twitter points out, also that it's the biggest blown lead in Sharks franchise history. Interesting there. On the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHoney.com, someone unnamed, or Craig and JC says, Vingan tweeted a stat. Apparently, the Preds were previously 0-173-0.
That's correct. Trailing. Yeah,
that's a pretty good
26 year streak broken.
That's a pretty good stat. April in Portland says it was electric last night after the first. Barron needs to go. I have no idea why Stastny's not playing. Needs to be on the ice. Take it back, Joe. You know I want them to make it. Yeah.
Well, I can address that for sure.
Yeah,
too.
Go ahead.
Well. To answer April's question, Emma Lingan actually asked that question last night as to why Stastny wasn't dressed, and I think it's a fair question because Spencer is more than capable of making some good plays. And so Andrew Brunette went back to kind of talking about the game in Calgary that wasn't really a good example of his play, and so they just wanted him to simply sit and watch. Sometimes that's what Andrew Brunette's done with some of his players. You know, last year, Luke Evangelista was one guy that he sat once or twice and said, hey, just watch from afar. Let's get you settled. And, you know, remember, too, Stastny's been out for a long time. So they're really giving him some time to get acclimated as well. Yeah. So that's what he had to say last night, to us at least, once he was asked.
It is great to have that as an answer. Because, you know, we saw a lot of promise from him, of course, last year. You know, he's gone through a lot of stuff. But it's good to at least have that as an answer. Probably sooner rather than later would be preferred. Ty's very excited with your We Didn't Start the Fire intro, Nick. By the way, for anybody watching on the stream, I'm wearing this. Now, I can take this off so that I can look like Head Wound Harry on the stream. But I figured that, you know, I figured I'll keep this. Ooh, wait a minute.
I'm really hoping by the end of the show that thing doesn't come with your beanie at the end. It just will get pulled off. But yeah, you've been battling through. I thought it was hilarious that yesterday DJ Burnside put an egg on your head. I thought that was awesome.
Yes, yes. By the way, I'm going to get to Paul's question there. But another thing about last night, I mentioned it earlier in the first segment, but the Yossi play, you know, where he has to go all out to keep the puck in the offensive zone, ends up with a Yossi goal. Here's what Andrew Brunette had to say about that, one of the key plays of last night's comeback.
I mean, a lot of big moments, but the game tying goal by Yossi, he knocks it down, and in fact, doesn't touch it, which would have been a whistle, and then Yossi ties it up. Just a lot of like little details that kind of go into the game there.
Yeah, I mean, amazing play by an extremely cerebral player to do that and then tie up a stick. And Yost keeping it alive. We had that kind of relentless kind of identity there, especially that second half of the game. And that play showed a lot of it in there. But yeah, it was an amazing play by Factor, but even by Yost and by keeping it alive. And then he made a great shot, you know, obviously. It was a huge goal for us. Kind of got to our game that period.
That was Andrew Brunette after that ridiculous and awesome play by Roman Yossi. So look, I think the another stat for this team, of course, Nick, is four goals or more, and they're tremendous. And you flip it around, three or less, and it's a problem. To Paul's question there, you know, I heard Barry Trotz on with Jared yesterday, and of course Jared keeps asking, that he would like them to lose, you know, and get a draft pick. But obviously that's not how these guys are thinking. First of all, I mean, I think it's really important to have an idea of what you're working with for next year, whether you make a run, I mean, whether you actually get there or not. I think it's a big deal for the players and coaches that they do go on a run, that they do make a push for it. And that will screw up the draft thing, but obviously they couldn't care less, and you can't expect them to care at all about it. So as far as what Trotz would do around the – you know, I think we've talked about this, but I have a hard time believing there's any performance on the ice that would inspire Trotz to go get a rental. I don't see that. We've talked about the O'Reilly rumors. I also think if they're going to play well, I think that's also not on the board. Like Alex Doherty said yesterday, I mean, they're light on centers anyway, you know. And so I think that a buy of someone who he believes could fit into the future is possible. But, you know, again, it's like, you know, do you sell off a major piece? I mean, I think that's possible. If you're making a run, if you're really making a push and everyone's playing well, then that's less likely. And again, it's not just do you finish it. I mean, you put yourself in such a hole, it's very doubtful. As Bob, did I say Paul? Did I call Bob from Antioch Paul?
Did you really?
I'm sorry, Bob.
Yeah, and sorry, I was on.
I called you Paul, but
yeah,
but yes,
you're good. Bob, hey, speaking of Paul.
Great caller always on the Preds. What's up with Paul?
Speaking of Paul, he'll be here at 7:30, he tells me.
Are you serious? He's coming at 7:30.
That's what he says, yeah.
I mean, he comes in earlier on days when, like, I'm not alone here flailing by
He's
myself.
He's desperate. He's desperate. Joe is desperate.
Unbelievable, man. Man. Freaking believable.
Yeah, no, I think I was, and sorry about that. I know that you were trying to ask me more about that as well. I think for the Preds with Trotz and his approach, Joe, I think that's exactly right. I mean, I don't know what he's going to really go for here. I mean, he'd be honestly dumb to buy. I mean, that's not going to happen, I don't think. But look, Ryan O'Reilly last week, you know, I thought about asking him about, you know, what he had in terms of discussion with Barry Trotz. And quite frankly, he doesn't expect it to happen. I mean, in lieu of something insurmountable for Barry Trotz to get from another team, there's not going to be a trade. I mean, it's simply put as that. And I think he values Ryan, you know, culture over results currently. And I mean, that ultimately mattered. And last night, my one-on-one was with Justin Barron. And, you know, I asked him, was there any specific adjustment that Coach Andrew Brunette made for you guys that was very evident? And he said, honestly, there wasn't one adjustment, but all the veterans spoke up in the locker room. And so to me, that's really telling about how much this group has really changed since the start of the season. The first 2 months were just abysmal.
Yeah, but
and then you know, I mean,
that's where I get into, and I understand they have veterans, they have good culture, but I mean, I just. Like if you perform the way they did in the first 2 months of the season, then the obvious question is, well, where the heck was the culture then, right?
Right, exactly.
I mean, you know, so, but I'm with you. I mean, Ryan O'Reilly is absolutely, he is a culture setter. I mean, there's no question about it. And again, it's like, yeah, yes, there are other teams that would be interested. You could fetch something, but then you're continuing to be deficient in your area that is a problem. I mean, we've talked from the time he came here about, you know, and Barry Trotz has talked about this, about Ryan O'Reilly kind of gradually moving down the lineup and being able to do that. And I think that's an important thing moving forward for this team. I really do. And I think he's the type of guy that whatever role you put him in, he'll go out there and
right.
break a leg figuratively.
For sure.
Ethan from Lawrenceburg on the text line driven by WilsonCountyHunter.com. Says, I just can't understand their love for Luke Shen. That is a frequent refrain. Joy from Bellevue says, PK is probably watching the stream and laughing at Joe fending for himself. He also says, I think you're doing awesome, Joe. Thank you, Joey. I don't know that I'm doing awesome.
I smoke weed constantly.
There you go. Exactly. I am also, you know, I'm getting into the YouTube chat to make sure that, you know, people, you know, can chime in on the YouTube chat. That's usually a very lively place, too. Deagle says, damn, Robbie hanging Joe out to dry this morning. And then says, what? PK is the hot substitute teacher? I don't even know what to do with that one. George says, yes, Soros is allowed to make a save to bail the team out for their whack defensive coverage. Yeah, look, I mean, it's, again, it. No one will ever blame the goalie. No hockey team, no players, no coaches will ever say, yeah, the goalie, it's a tough night for the goalie. It's always like, we got to be better. And
yep.
That's true. They do have to be better. There's no doubt.
Yep.
They made some brutal mistakes and left him out to dry. But, again, when you're a guy like him, paid like he is, with the franchise investing in you, like, yeah, you've got to – you got to bail some people out. So, I mean, I think that's this run, again, it's four in a row, but this run that they're hoping to have does not happen unless you get grade A UC Soros.
Yeah, for sure. Well, hey, unless they turn the keys over similar to how the Red Wings did with Dominic Hasek and Chris Osgood, you just never know, I guess. But, look, I think – and by the way, last night, for just some more context and some and stats sake, because I love looking at stuff like this, is that was the second time that UC Soros started a game and allowed 4 goals on 8 or less shots faced, by the way. So, and the last time that happened was back in 2022 when they were in Seattle. So, look, I mean, things have to get better defensively. Luke Shen, great question for sure, but you know, whenever I start questioning Luke Shen, he fires a rebound and someone scores right afterwards. So it's really strange how that works.
Or he'll throw some hands with some effectiveness, too.
That's true.
Let's not forget that.
Yeah, very true. But I don't know. I mean, look, there are some attractive pieces on this team for sure. You know, Gus Nyquist is one. I know that Elliot Friedman's
talked
about.
That one I can see.
Yeah.
And that one I can see.
Elliot's talked about how Jeremy Lazan is a guy that teams are calling about, but Preds are saying, no, we want to keep him. So there are some pieces, but very curious as to who Barry Trotz might sell off here.
And I think someone like that, that's where where they go matters, right? Like a Nyquist, if he plays really well and they're rolling, then it's like, okay, well, let's not mess up the apple cart. But I do think that if it's anything short of rolling and really making a push, then I think that's a definite.
And I think too, in my last thought on that, if they traded Gus Nyquist and Barry Trotz would be right on his plane here, then you bring up a guy like Joakim Kimmel. Then you bring up somebody else that you like, maybe Ozzie Weisblatt as a guy that you just call up for the rest of the year. But they at least feel confident enough to where they could easily do that and not have any problems.
Yeah. When we come back, I'm going to talk some Vols and Vanderbilt basketball because I'm taking over the show, and so I'm going to talk some college basketball. Thank you very much. Robbie and Rex are 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex are 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Sponsored by First Horizon, Big Bank Muscle, Small Bank Hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. Welcome back in, and we've been talking Preds. We are going to get to the Vols. We're going to have Ben McKee from Go Vols 24/7 coming up next segment to talk a little Vols hoops, bounce back from them. Last night, I do want to get to a couple comments still left from the Preds on the YouTube chat here. Alex says, one, Justin Barron needs to be fired into the sun. That trade was awful. Last night was a good example of why. Also, not to mention, there's no reason if you're a good team on paper to have to make that large of a comeback against San Jose. That first period was absolutely pathetic. And that's true. You shouldn't have to be in that situation. It's like in one night, the Preds basically did like the Ohio State postseason where it's like, well, this is rock bottom. Getting blown out at home by the Sharks when everybody had a little bit of hope that you're going to start to do something, you tell everybody, nope, we actually suck, and we're going to get blown out at home by the Sharks. And then that turns into the biggest comeback in franchise history. So all of a sudden, it's four in a row. So I hear you. They do deserve discredit for the first period. You also have to give them the credit for the comeback because there are teams that aren't going to make that comeback. You know, even against the Sharks.
Yeah, when your team allows 3 goals in 15 minutes, and you know, that's pretty pathetic, I would say.
Absolutely. So I am going to talk a little college hoops. Ah, it's beautiful. Vols, let me get to – so I'm doing something new this year at the Athletic, which, first of all, it's way more work than I realized. I totally – like when I signed up, I was like, oh, yeah, that sounds fun. Let's do that. Doing the weekly brackets, you know, being the bracketologist or bracketometrist or bracket enterologist, whatever you want to call it.
Yet another shameless plug from Joe Rexroad.
There you go, for the Athletic. But this week, you've got, you know, the Vols, to me, have fallen. They have fallen to a 2 seed. The, the loss to Vanderbilt, which was a tremendous game, great win for Vanderbilt. You know, right now, I think Tennessee, Alabama, Iowa State are really in a battle in terms of for a 1 seed. And, you know, I think Auburn and Duke are two teams that are right now, like, they're fighting for the number one overall seed. Auburn and Duke are, you look at their resumes, they're ridiculous. Tennessee plays at Auburn Saturday night. I will be there in Auburn and really looking forward to that. I don't think Auburn's going to have Jani Broome, but they continue to roll without him. But Tennessee dropping to a 2 seed in my bracket, where, by the way, I have them playing 15 seed Norfolk State. Meanwhile, Vanderbilt, I have a 10 seed right now with that win over Tennessee. Now, last night, Vanderbilt, a little bit of reality for both of these teams. Vanderbilt goes to Alabama and has some runs, hangs in there, but ultimately just really can't get nearly enough stops. And when Alabama gets going, it's hard to get stops. But a little bit of a dose of reality for Vanderbilt last night at Alabama. But still, you beat Tennessee. I mean, that resume got way better. So I think Vanderbilt right now is safely in the field. Huge game for both of these teams, just massive games coming up on Saturday. Again, Tennessee at Auburn with a chance to beat the number one team. Tennessee, well, not too long ago, was the number one team. And Vanderbilt hosting Kentucky. Be very interested to see. I mean, Kentucky's having a better year than people thought. And Kentucky fans are excited, and they're pointing and laughing at Arkansas as Cal sits there still with no wins in the SEC. Kentucky traditionally puts a ton of people in Memorial Gym when they play at Vanderbilt. I expect plenty of Kentucky fans there, but also feel like Vanderbilt students are energized. Vanderbilt fans are energized by this team, still 15-4 after that loss, trying to get in the NCAA tournament for the first time since 2017, the first time in 8 years. And I think they got a fighting chance to do it. It's just this league is just so brutal. And speaking of that, you know, the Vols, again, you lose that game at Vanderbilt. That's a crusher. You know, Chaz Lanier has a chance at the free throw line, misses the free throw. He's been struggling. You've been struggling to rebound. That is a concern with Tennessee. But then Chaz Lanier gets off immediately last night, finishes with 23 points. That team is just it's so hard to beat that team at home, but beat at home. But Mississippi State is a team that last year really punked Tennessee twice, including here in Nashville in the SEC tournament. A lot of the same guys from that team. And so what Tennessee did in holding them to especially 16 points in the first half, you know, They got 40 in the second half, made it less of a blowout in the final score than it really was. But that defensive effort, Tennessee, I think, is still a team that when it comes down to it, can be as good defensively as any team in college basketball. It comes down to, again, the rebounding thing is a little bit concerning. But they have rim protection, and like Okpara last night really stepped up on the glass. They won on the glass against a very good rebounding team. So that's a, you know, rebounding is somewhat an effort stat. I mean, to some extent, you know, but Tennessee has had some struggles in that area in some of these games, which is a little bit strange.
Well, Joe, let me ask you.
Look, like, this is where Toby Awaka was such a key guy for them off the bench last year, and they don't have him. So they've got to have other people have got to step up, and guards have to rebound.
For sure. Joe, let me ask you about Tennessee in this regard, because I've kept track of their season relatively well compared to most teams. I don't watch too much, but I watch enough to keep track of the Vols. Why do you think they've had problems, you know, maintaining leads over good teams? Obviously, they were upset once this year so far. It was a pretty close game from what I thought at first. Then it kind of just got out of hand, but what do you think they have to do to mature their game to ultimately be this powerhouse that everyone's kind of dubbing them to be?
Yeah, you know, I mean, they're, again, the rebounding has been an issue. They got blown out at Florida. So they got blown out by 30 at Florida, and they've lost two games. They got blown out by Florida, and then they lost, you know, this incredible 76-75 game Saturday at Vanderbilt. My concern for them is depth. My biggest concern is probably the weight that's on Zakai Ziegler's shoulders. I think he's an All-American. You know, the midseason All-American teams are coming out. He was on my team, and I think he should be on everybody's team because people should take defense into account. And I think too many people look at scoring totals and just go off that. Zakai Ziegler does everything for that team. When he's on the floor, it's a completely different team than when he's off the floor. And there's no true point guard backup on this roster, which I think is a mistake. And, of course, you know, some guys have left and things like that. But, you know, Freddie DeLeon is up at Penn State. They'd love to have him right now as a backup point. It's hard to keep guys in those roles in this era. And so he's up playing a lot more at Penn State than he would be here. But he could be making a Final Four run here, you know. That's what happened. So it's hard, and Ziegler is just – there's just so much on him. But his defense, I mean, Meshack and Ziegler together, it's the best defender combo in the country. I'm confident in saying that. And Ziegler himself is an All-American because on both ends of the floor, he completely drives that team. And it just bothers me that, you know, like this year when the All-America stuff comes out, there are going to be higher-scoring guards who might end up – you know, beating him out, but defense is half the game. And I'll say that forever and ever. But to answer your question, I mean, look, they just have to get better. I mean, they have to they have to rebound. They have to not go through those offensive lulls. I feel like Rick Barnes teams a lot of times around this time of year, late January into February, have some offensive struggles that they have to get through. It was good last night that Chaz Lanier kind of broke out of the shooting slump. So yeah, at Auburn,
it's been good to see him play well too. By the way, I've really enjoyed having Lanier on that team. I mean, where did he come from? It was somewhere in Florida. North Florida. That's right. Yeah, but no, I think he's been a fun player to watch for them so far. But you know, can he make the biggest difference for them down the stretch, Joe? That's the biggest question mark that I have for them is, can he be a dynamic guy? Obviously, it was Ziegler who got hurt last year, right?
No, so that was 2 years ago.
2 years ago, that's right. But regardless, I think for them to make some noise in March, I mean, they had a pretty respectable run last year.
Well, they went to the Elite Eight for the first time, or the second time in school history.
Yeah, so we'll see if they can, you know, repeat that and go farther than that. But, I mean, look, I think there's a lot of questions there for sure. And, you know, like you said, they have to get better overall, but you know, I mean, ultimately, if they can be dominant in the paint too, that'd be nice. So we'll see what they end up looking like later on, Joe.
So Tennessee has at Auburn, they got Kentucky at home, they got Florida after that, they got and by the way, Missouri after that. I mean, it just, there's no rest at all in this SEC. Coming up, we got Ben McKee to talk about this team. Robbie and Rex are 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex are 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie's sick today. So I'm here running the show with Nick Kieser, Paul Kaharsky coming in at some point next hour here, trying to get him to, you know, get his butt moving a little bit. But in the meantime, very happy to welcome in our next guest, friend of the show, Ben McKee, GoVols247.com, does a great job covering Tennessee. Ben, how's it going? And thanks for jumping on and throwing me a life raft.
It's going well. It's going well. Happy to save you and help you anytime I can. So I appreciate you having me on.
So you're up early after, but it was at least a nice early start last night. But after covering Tennessee with a big win over Mississippi State, first of all, where do you think this team is right now, Ben? I mean, I thought Lanier having the night he did was big after what happened Saturday in Nashville. And they rebounded last night to go with – you knew they were going to just defend like crazy. Like, it was what this team can do to anybody. But I really like how they rebounded last night. How big was that as a bounce back for this team with a crazy schedule coming up?
Yeah, I think it was huge. I think it was it's kind of crazy to talk about, but I think it was a must-win just in regards to trying to keep pace with Auburn in the SEC. Now, I don't think that anybody will catch up to Auburn for that matter. I think it would be a big upset, even as good as the SEC is, if any team could catch up to Auburn and surpass them to win the league title this year. But if there is any sliver of hope, you had to win last night. And Tennessee is also currently in contention for a one seed. So in order to maintain those awards, I guess, or, you know, achievements, I thought last night was a must win. And but more importantly, you wanted to see them play better basketball, because if you don't win the SEC, if you don't get a one seed, you can still go have a great deal of success in the tournament. And in order to have a great deal of success in the tournament, you need to be playing your best basketball by the time March rolls around, obviously. And I thought last night was a nice step. There's still a lot that Tennessee needs to improve on. Well, I don't even know that they need to improve on, just continue to make adjustments with. I think that it's a group that's learning right now because there are three prominent transfers in the mix. Lanier, Igor Milicic, and Felix Akpar are all playing critical roles for Tennessee. And I think they're still adjusting to Rick Barnes and his system. I think they're still adjusting to the SEC. And I thought last night the numbers for Chaz probably a little bit inflated in terms of some of the missed shots that he had in the second half make his numbers not look bad, but he had a really, really good first half. I mean, 14 points on 4 of 7 shooting from three, and his final numbers don't do what his first half shooting numbers, it doesn't do them justice. So I thought last night was really important in that regard, because I think one of the things that this team is adjusting with is Chaz himself, just learning to play through the physicality of this league, learning to play with the little bit of space that he gets in this league. And then it was also really good to see Felix Akpar have a big night, especially on the glass, because Tennessee lacks the more physical, imposing body. Felix and Cade Phillips and Igor are more wiry than the traditional postman. So continuing to be consistent in the post and win the rebounding battle and give some offensively, I think is a critical step that Tennessee needs to take in the post. And Felix only had 9 points, but I thought last night was another good step in the right direction. And he's had 2 or 3 weeks here where he's played really good basketball. So I don't think anything was season altering last night in terms of their response, but it was a really good response with how frustrating that Vanderbilt loss was in a number of ways. Last night was much cleaner outside of a couple silly turnovers here and there.
Yeah. And those three guys, Okpara, you know, Milicic and Phillips, you got 24 rebounds between them. I mean, I think that's the thing. That's where at times, because of course I'm comparing this team to last year's team. You know, can this team be that level of team? And, you know, it's hard to, like, you're just not replacing a Josiah, Jordan James in terms of, like, the versatility defensively, and he come out and hit a shot. Like, there's some things you're just not replacing. But Awaka is a guy who, I was surprised that both of those guys left, and that's a guy who, of course, is the wide-body rebounder they don't have. But I'm with you. I mean, Okpara, they also have rim protection with these guys, and they have the skill that Igor brings. At times I've watched them and said, you know, this might actually end up being a better, you know, tandem. Meanwhile, you got Ziegler, you got Mayshak. Lanier is not going to be, you know, he's not going to be a lottery pick, but he's kind of that guy who has stepped into that scoring role. A guy who I'm really interested in, and I feel like this has got to be one of the keys, and, you know, has had ups and downs, but you can certainly see the talent, is Darlin Stone DeBar. He only played 7 minutes last night. Where do you think he is? And how, do you agree, like, they need, like, 15, 17 minutes from him and a little bit more shots from him to sort of give those other guys on the perimeter a break?
Yeah, I totally agree. And, you know, there's a lot of questions about whether or not Tennessee has the depth right now to make it throughout the season. There's concern about if Tennessee has enough depth from game to game. I've been of the mindset that it's been a little bit overblown the last couple of weeks since Cam Carr quit the team halfway through the season and JP Estrella went down with that season-ending foot surgery. Nine players is enough for an individual basketball game. I mean, if you can have a rotation of eight or nine in a game, I think that you can be perfectly fine in that regard. Where it becomes difficult is obviously if you suffer another injury or two that's going to require somebody to miss significant time, then the numbers become a concern at that point. But if all nine stay healthy and are available night in and night out, then I think you're okay from a numbers standpoint. But you also need your nine to produce, right? Like Darlin Stone DeBar and even Bishop Boswell to a lesser extent. He's a true freshman who's still trying to learn offensively what Rick wants and just not commit the freshman turnovers. He needs to be able to go in there like he did last night and in spurts, give them a minute or two here and there to allow Zakai to steal some rest on the bench before a media timeout or something. But with DeBar, he needs to contribute minutes wise for sure, because the nine scholarship players available, that doesn't work if DeBar is not contributing, because now if you take the freshman Bishop Boswell into consideration and then you take DeBar who's not giving you much, I mean, now all of a sudden that nine turns into seven. So I do think it's critical that he takes a step forward. And he is, it's been a bit of a roller coaster for him. And that's why consistency is the name of the game for DeBar. He's got to find a way to be more consistent. And I do think that his ceiling is probably higher than people realize. I mean, this was a guy that Rick Barnes would challenge him over the summer in practice, and he would respond by taking practice over, by just hitting shot after shot from the three-point line. And you've seen glimpses of it at times during the season, but he just has not been able to get it going consistently. And they need him to. They need him to prevent the lack of defensive mistakes. And offensively, he needs to find a way to get his shot going. He was able to hit a couple at Texas, but he has not been able to hit much since then. So I completely agree with you. He's somebody that he doesn't have to carry the load, but he has to be a piece of the puzzle from a number standpoint, and because he's good enough to do so. And we're talking about Tennessee in regards to making a Final Four or Elite Eight run. If that is going to happen, then they need Darlin Stone DeBar to step up and produce.
Yeah, and I agree with you on the overall depth. I mean, shoot, even, you know, an eight man rotation is fine, you know, but right. But the guy that I worry about is Ziegler, just because, I mean, like last night, 38 minutes, and I just feel like, and I feel like we saw at the end of last year. I don't know that he had the legs, you know, at the very end. And of course, you know, he struggled to shoot. Now, you know, so you can go through shooting ups and downs. Everybody does, but I just wonder if his legs were a little bit, you know, not there for him. And I wonder this year, you know, if they can't sneak him some rest. The problem is this league too, right? It's like every single night is an absolute grind. So Ben McKee, hey, I really appreciate you coming on, and I will see you down there at Auburn Saturday night. Should be a fun one, Tennessee and Auburn on Saturday.
Looking forward to seeing you, Joe.
All right, thanks, Ben. Ben McKee, Go Vols 24/7 Sports. We come back, we will get into the Tennessee Titans. Paul Kaharsky is apparently just racing here. He says he's at Old Hickory Boulevard. And I'm not demeaning him at all whatsoever. And I won't at all on the entire show, I promise you. We will talk Titans. Robbie and Rex show, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.